It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. I am John Schmelt, joined by Lance Bendel. The phone number is 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. The program is brought to you by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants. Lance, T-minus 6 days until
Indeed.
The NFL draft. We are getting in there. Actually, I guess it's technically seven if you want to count today as a day. So about 7 days until the draft, which is exciting. We still don't know what's going to happen at the top. I feel like other than the Caleb Williams thing, which it feels like a fait accompli, these teams have done a really nice job of really keeping their cards close to the vest here.
Sure.
And not allowing teams to really know what they're doing. There seems to be some thought that Jaden Daniels is going to be the pick to Washington, but this isn't like some overwhelming thing that we've seen in the past. Like at this time 5 years ago, we thought the Browns were going to draft Sam Darnold, and then all of a sudden it's Baker Mayfield. So I would compare that situation to what we're feeling now with the Commanders. The Patriots, heck, I still think they could trade down. That could be a possibility. What are the Cardinals and the Chargers going to do? So I still think there's a lot of unknowns here before the Giants pick it.
Well, I was going to say, John, it actually reminds me a bit of 2021 when there was a lot of buzz surrounding Trey Lance, Mac Jones. Remember the San Francisco 49ers? Are they going to go for the individual that only has one start in terms of his experience out of college, or are you going to go with the more proven commodity out of Alabama? Yeah. And then it turned out to be Trey Lance. So I'm reminded more of 2021 than going far back as you are with 2018.
All right, now let's get to our guests. We only got two more days of prospect reports from our various schools. We saved one of the biggest schools for last. The reason I pushed them last, I wanted to get that Brock Bowers workout in before we talked to our Georgia person. Unfortunately, he did not test, but he did catch some balls at his individual pro day. He joined us last year as well. We're joined by Roddy Nabulsi. He's the publisher of UGASports.com. Does a great job covering the Georgia Bulldogs. Roddy, you got John Schmelk and Lance Meadow here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Thanks for doing this for a second straight year, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I appreciate you guys having me on. I love talking to anybody that covers the Giants and Athens North, as a lot of us call it. So love talking to you guys.
All right, so why don't we start with Brock Bowers? He was dealing with that injury. He didn't have a chance to work out at the combine. He did that late workout. Where is he from what you hear, just in terms of the injury, one? And then do you think he is as elite of a player, and I believe he is just personally, where – as a tight end, even, he would be worthy of a top 10 pick?
He's worthy of a top 10 pick, and I've been covering Georgia since 1993, so it's my 31st year. I've covered elite tight ends, you know, from the Randy McMichael to the Leonard Pope. I mean, just guys who have, you know, made it in the NFL, and he's the best I've ever seen. He's maybe one of the best players I've ever covered. And it's not just because, you know, he won the Mackey Award twice. You know, awards are – he should have won it three times, but it's, you know, awards are here nor there. But it's just that when every time you needed him to make a play, he did. And some of them were superhuman. I think of this, him laying out against Ohio State. He knows he has to get a first down. He dives forward, puts his hands on the ground, pulls his body forward to get across the sticks. Like, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be able to do that, you know, at 265 pounds. So this is a guy whose speed is unquestioned. He's been over 21 miles an hour four times since 2021, and the entire NFL roster of tight ends have only done it five times. So he's fast, he makes great catches, and he can knock you in the dirt. So to me, he's a top 10 pick.
Well, speaking of knocking in the dirt, I think the major question is, there's no doubt about it, what he could provide as an offensive weapon, but from a blocking standpoint, we seem to try to see whether or not everybody could be George Kittle. And he certainly is in a unique group of his own. So where has he, to you, stood out on the blocking front? And even though there may be the desire to block, do you foresee there being more improvement in that area and more ability that he can tap into here moving forward?
If you talk to him, he doesn't want to talk to you about touchdowns. He'll point out a decleater block. He will point out a pancake. He will point out a just a crackback. He will point those out to you before he talks about, oh, yeah, well, I scored a touchdown. Touchdowns are great, but to him, he likes knocking a guy down more than anything else. That's his, that's what will be on his highlight reel if he were to make it himself. So he's got that ability. You've seen him climb. You see him take on the most dangerous man on the edge. You see him on the inside zone, picking up the backside pursuit, just laying him out. George was able to get away with a lot of sketchy run calls, mainly because, you know, you've got that sixth offensive lineman out there. So anybody questioning his blocking ability, then they just haven't watched the tape.
And, Roddy, I think the thing that jumps out to me, and you mentioned this in your opening statement, that what makes him special is his run-after-catch ability. You know, I think he could play running back with his ability to break tackles, change direction, make people miss. And, you know, Lance likes to call guys an offensive weapon, but I really do think he's somebody that can get used in so many different ways as a move player, as a guy you can hand the ball off to, you can just run screens for, you can get him downfield, to your point, because he's so good at the catch point. But his run-after-catch stuff is probably the best I've ever seen from a tight end.
Yeah, and Georgia actually used him as a running back. They never rolled out in a game, but there was one point where they were thin. They had a lot of guys injured. And we broke the news that, hey, just so y'all know, who's working out a running back in Georgia practices is a guy who's done in high school with Brock Bowers. They're lining him up, you know, high formation, just handing him the ball because that's what he can do. But you're right, after the catch, you think, okay, well, he's down. He's going to be tackled. But he outruns guys who have an angle on him. Again, if you're running over 21 miles an hour as a tight end, I mean, who's going to catch him? Who's got him? So, I mean, that's great speed for wide receivers, and he's actually able to do that as a tight end. So I'm with you. And plus, then if you do actually catch him, you got to bring him down. And it's like trying to tackle a Buick. It's just not a fun job.
Well, to your point, I just looked it up. He had 19 run plays over the course of his career. And for a tight end, I would say, you know, that's not too shabby. Even though, your point, you mentioned, you know, they didn't necessarily showcase him in that regard all throughout the course of his career. So I think anybody that does select him can feature him essentially on offense. Where do you see, though, his ceiling on the next level? Is he, in your mind, can he be a Travis Kelce? Meaning if somebody brings him in, can he be the number one wide receiver slash tight end for years to come, and you don't have to worry about if you're lacking with other weaponry, or do you see him more in being maybe in that second tier of tight ends that we look at the NFL?
I completely expect him to be a pro bowler for 30 years. I mean, I exaggerate a bit, but that's just what I expect from him because he'll accept no less from himself. And we can go down the list of guys that could be drafted by Georgia going forward. People say, well, what about Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint? He didn't get a lot of balls. I'm like, yeah. Ladd McConkey, he was never a 1,000-yard receiver. No. They didn't throw a whole lot to Kendall Milton out of the backfield, right, because they kept throwing it to, you know, Brock Bowers. So if you have a horse, you know, ride your horse. So if any team drafts him, they will have a pro bowler, maybe not year one, but definitely by year two, year three. He will be an elite. He will be a Hall of Famer, barring injury. And he's tough, you know, and this is a guy who he's had surgeries and he's fought back and he's a tough guy. And he's as long as he's healthy, he's indestructible and it will be you can build your offense around it.
Final question, Roddy, on Bowers, just because we have a lot of the guys we want to get to here. One, you mentioned the injury. It seems like he's good to go. Do you think he'll be a full go whenever he shows up to whatever team drafts him in terms of dealing with that lower leg injury?
Yeah, I think he's fine now. I think if I'm his agent, I'm like, look, you don't have to prove anything. The only thing you can do is hurt yourself. You've got tape. You've got GPS numbers, you know, on how fast you are. You've got miles and miles of videotape. Why take a chance? Just, you know, go do the bare minimum. Let your tape do the talking for you, and when you show up for camp, you know, go win your spot.
On the topic of injuries, I want to move to Amarius Mims, the right tackle. He suffered an ankle injury this past season, and then from what I understand, he had tightrope surgery before returning for the final three regular season games. So he did return. How, though, much of a concern is there in terms of durability based on what he went through over the course of this past season?
The tightrope surgery, you usually come back from that stronger than when you went into it. The way they pull the two bones together and make it so that you're very unlikely to have another high ankle sprain like he did there. And if I had been his advisor when he came back to Georgia, when he was finally cleared to play, I'd have been like, man, there's only a couple games left. just go start practicing for the combine, get ready for it. You're a multimillionaire here in a few months. You don't need to go through all that. You don't need to chance it. But that's not who Amarius Mims is. He came back and he told everybody to mind their own business. He was advising him not to play, and he came back and played. Now, he did kind of re-aggravate it a little bit in the championship game against Alabama, which really hurt Georgia's chances, which shows you how important he is at your right tackle spot. He is a massive human being. I started covering him in 10th grade, I believe. And we walked out on the field, we're like, who the hell is that? He is a prototype left tackle, right tackle. If you had to build one in Madden, you'd build one that looked like Amarius Mims. He's just a monster of a human being. He's got the speed. He's got the footwork. He's got the thin ankles, the high butt, everything you're looking for. Long arms, strength, speed. He's just a prototypical NFL tackle. So I wouldn't worry about the tightrope surgery. He's back from that. He's moving fine. That's not something that you – it's like with an ACL, you worry, you know, years and years afterwards, you know, about it coming back or something like that or being weakened. Now, that tightrope surgery, that's perfectly fine. He'll come back from that 100% and be ready to be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, and Roddy, I think people call him raw because he's only started, I think, 8 games, right? But I don't think that's the right word, because if you actually watch the tape of when he played, he's – I mean, no one gets by him. His pass protection is immaculate. He has good balance. He uses his hands really well. He's just so long and big, it's hard to get around him just from a physics standpoint. Now, I think there are some things maybe in the run game that, you know, being that tall, he needs to clean up and everything. So I think inexperienced is probably a little bit a better description than raw for him, right? So how do you look at it just as his lack of starts and lack of snaps maybe compared to some of these other offensive tackle prospects that teams are going to be choosing from in the middle of that first round?
Well, I said the exact same thing you did. Someone asked me, he's a raw guy. And I'll say if a guy's raw, it's a nugget, and I'll point it out. But he is not. He is more inexperienced. He hasn't had the chance. But a good, you know, he's behind some very good NFL players right now. Georgia's loaded. So it's not like a guy can come in here as a true freshman, break into the starting lineup, and, you know, beat somebody out who's already – who's a five-star from 3 years ago who's playing his junior or senior year. So – when you got Warren McClendon in front of him, well, that's McClendon's playing in the league. He's tough to get past. So he didn't have as many chances, and then he got hurt. He had the ankle surgery, so what could have been a full season for him, everyone's like, oh, well, he played, you know, all 14 games for Georgia. Yeah, well, he missed a few there and was able to actually have a major surgery and come back in the same season. That's how tough he is. But to your point, he is inexperienced. There is stuff he can work on. But to me, the NFL draft is about potential. You're not trying to get a guy who has maxed out his potential and can't grow, can't get better. The NFL scouts look for guys who can play in their league. And if you turn on the tape and watch what this guy does, and here's the thing, you have tape from practice. Georgia films all their practices, and if you are an NFL scout, you're watching him go up against Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt, Nolan Smith, you know, Trayvon Walker. He's faced all those guys in practices, good on good, one-on-one. And you've got the tape of it. So you don't have to just watch his game tape. You can watch his practice tape. And it's like, if you can stop Trayvon Walker, the number one pick from a few years ago, then who can you stop?
I feel like injury is a bit of a theme here with this Georgia class, because we were talking about with Mims with the ankle surgery. Well, Ladd McConkey, wide receiver, he dealt with the back injury early in the year, then the ankle issue late in the season. He is a really good route runner, but it seems as if he can't hold up from a physical standpoint, he doesn't necessarily have the blazing speed to perhaps jump out and jump off the page with those other wide receivers. So, two-parter for you. A, durability, any concern on that front? And how much is that polished route running something that you think can hold up on the NFL level?
Let me take him in reverse order. With the route running, the knowledge of the game, he can identify what the coverage is, especially when they're trying to hide it. And he picks a defensive part with his route, especially when he gets to the top of the route. He's got two different options. He knows which way to go. And what you see with him is separation. I would call him Ladd Separation McConkey, because he's always got a yard or two on whoever's supposed to cover him. He knows the game as well as anybody I've ever seen, and he's always open. And people think of him as he's not the fastest guy out there. He's deceptively quick. You can't get that open if you're slow. he would just be covered up. So he gets out there and does the thing. Now, from a durability standpoint, that is my fear, because the back issue was weird. We just could never get a good feel on exactly what was bothering him in his back. He's had some other ankle issues, stuff like that, I don't want to worry about. But from a back standpoint, I'm like, yeah, that's important. You know, there's a lot that can be going on there. We never got a good answer on what it was. And we dug like crazy. We break a lot of stories, but I could never get a solid answer on exactly what was bothering him in his back. So that is my only hesitation with Ladd McConkey. But if I want a top flight wide receiver, if I want a guy who's going to be open, who's going to make catches, who's going to make circus catches, who's going to get my offense down the field, who knows. Here's my pet peeve, watching a guy run a dig route on 3rd and 7 and he winds up a yard short. That's not Ladd McConkey. He's always going to get past the sticks before he makes the catch. So, again, he just field awareness, situational awareness, he has it.
Now, Roddy, I think this is a little bit of a stereotyping that's done by, you know, people that cover the draft and scout. People say, oh, Ladd McConkey, he's a slot guy. Just put him in the slot, let him run in the slot. That's what he does. You look at his measurements, how he ran, his height, and just his overall profile. To me, I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be able to succeed outside. How did you see him, and how did he play when he was given the chance to play outside at Georgia rather than inside in the slot?
I like him better outside. A lot of people are like, oh, he's a great slot guy, you know, a 4.39 40, yeah, that's good enough. Like, no, give him more room. Give him room to work. Although putting him in the slot, sometimes, you know, he gets that nickel defender who he's going to embarrass, and he's not going up against your top quarterback. So, I mean, he's effective in the slot as well. But to me, when I saw him get outside, I'm like, look, give him more room to cook, give him more options, make a team account for him. And then while you're accounting for him, that safety sliding over, now all of a sudden, you went right back to Marcus Rosemary-Jack Sane, or you went to Brock Bowers, or you threw to a tight end out of the backfield. And he blocks, too. So if you want to typecast him as a slot receiver, then you're not using Ladd McConkey to the best of his ability.
Just another quick one on McConkey. I know he had punt return ability in the previous 2 years, but they did not utilize him, from what I understand, this past season. I'm assuming that was obviously, if you're going to play a prolific role on offense, they're not going to try to wear you down on specials. But now in the NFL, a team could very well look at him as a return guy. What jumped out to you about that facet of his game? And was the injury concern maybe even more of a reason why he wasn't utilized in that regard this past season?
No, I think it's mainly the fact you had some good guys. Georgia's, again, loaded. I'm not trying to, you know, sound rah-rah for Georgia. It's just when you look at the fact they signed the number one class, you know, year after year after year.
No, they're loaded. You're right.
They've got a lot of
they're
guys.
They're loaded.
Yeah. So when you've got, you know, 13 other guys who can also return punts, it's like, why take a chance with your top wideout? You know, like, look, let him get a little oxygen on the sideline. Let him get a breather. And we'll let somebody else catch it. But when he was doing it, you know, as he was coming up, fearless or stupid, I'm not sure which one it is, but sometimes he just stands in there and I'm like, hey, why don't you wave that one off? Wave it off. And, you know, and all of a sudden he'd catch it and then get lit up. And I'm like, man, I know you want to make a play, but you got to think about, A, you're protecting the ball, and B, you know, the fact that you would like to walk off the field and not be carried off. But sometimes he's a little too brave, which I think, well, honestly, NFL coaches and scouts should respect the fact that he wants to make a play. And, of course, he is coachable, and they say, look, you know, just catch it. You know, don't. How many times have you guys seen a guy standing on the 10-yard line, and all of a sudden he starts backing up to catch a punt, and you start screaming at him not to do that? He won't make that mistake. So, smart kid, like I said, situational awareness. He would be a good punt guy. Here's the thing. He can also tackle. He's done punt coverage. So if you need a gunner, put him out there. He'll drop somebody.
All right, I want to get to Javon Bullard on defense here, Roddy, and we're joined by Roddy Nabulsi again, publisher for UJSports.com. You know, I have my notes in front of me after watching Bullard. I have him basically tied with Jaden Hicks as my top two safeties in this draft class. He can play single high. He's got range. He anticipates well. You see him drop into the slot and cover and press and off against slot receivers. And I know he's not the biggest guy, but I think he's a pretty solid tackler. That's not anything that worried me when I watched him on tape. And then he goes out and runs like a 4.41 at the combine. To me, he's a guy, Roddy, that can do a little bit of everything. I'm not sure I see a weakness there when I watch him on tape, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the only weakness you'll see is that 4.10 and a half size, and you're like, wait a minute, big enough, but he plays bigger than that. Javon Bullard, I mean, you know, he's most famous for knocking out Marvin Harrison in the Peach Bowl and, you know, helping Georgia win and get back to a national title game. But it's not that one play. I mean, yeah, he's a headhunter. He will hit you. He'll light somebody up. But the fact that, you know, he made his bones playing star, playing that nickel spot for Georgia. So he was one of the leading tacklers on the team against the run. You know, he covered the slot receiver. He had to be the most dangerous man on the edge sometimes. He was everywhere on the field in that star position. The star position at Georgia is one of the most important Kirby Smart's defense, you know, in his scheme. So he made his bones there, and then, of course, they needed somebody to fill in at safety. He went back to safety and played even better. So when it comes to your point about, you know, yeah, he can be everywhere, he's went man-man. You know, he's great in press coverage. He's great off coverage. He's great in the single high, cover two, however you want to do it. The kid knows football, and he knows where to be and how to get there, and he arrives with bad intentions. He is not afraid of contact. He throws his body into it. He's not a finesse tackler. He hits through people because he knows when he was on that star spot, sometimes you're the only difference between, you know, somebody converting a third and two and somebody being stopped at the line. So he didn't ride a guy to the ground. He tried to hit through them and keep them from going forward. So to me, it's the basic fundamentals of the fact that his job is to get somebody to the ground, and he doesn't do it in a soft manner. He tackles hard and tries to get them going the other direction. I love that when I have a safety or a cornerback or a inside linebacker. Sometimes you see them kind of tackle a guy to the side, and it drives me crazy that you let him get two extra yards that he didn't deserve. So Javon Bullard he's a stopper. That's the best thing I could say about it. He can cover you, but you don't get past him in the open field. And how many guys can you say that about in the college level?
Well, as a player, though, that assumed that star role, it's always that gray area between a safety and a linebacker position. So where do you see fit-wise, Roddy, on the NFL level, given the fact that he is only 5'10", meaning if a team wanted to play him a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage and have more of a linebacker-esque type of role, can he hold up, or is he solely a secondary guy in your mind?
At the NFL level, to me, he's just a secondary guy. That's not a shot against him. It's just that's how the league is now. You know, is he going to be able to shed that tight end coming around the edge? I don't know. I would rather see him in the secondary, you know, cover the slot guy, put him in safety, let him slide, let him come in down into the box, send him on the edge blitz. Just give me that guy in the secondary doing – multiple different spots, and honestly, I would use him to trick offenses. Like, okay, you think this is where he's going to be, but right as you get into your cadence, he's moving, and you're not sure where he's going to wind up. I just like him because he's sneaky. He gets around and would absolutely drive you crazy.
All right, let's start rapid firing these guys a little bit quicker here, Roddy. There's just so many players. I want to make sure we get to them while we don't want to keep it too long. Kamari Lassiter, I'm going to make this question pretty simple because I feel like his tape was very solid. A lot of questions, though, about, I think, his overall top speed, his testing at his pro day, not where you want it to be in terms of his top speed. Did that show up to you watching him at all? Do you see him then maybe as more of a nickel corner because of maybe that lack of top speed? How do you view that poor testing time in the 40 relating back to what you saw from him on the field as a corner?
I never noticed it when he was playing. He was always assigned the best wide receiver on any team they faced, and he shut down some of the best wide receivers I've ever seen, you know, at least, you know, that he faced. So you didn't notice it. Well, why, he's two steps behind. He's three steps behind. My bigger issue was the way that, you know, sometimes they teach these guys to not play the ball in the air. You know, they like, hey, play the man, not the ball. And I'm like, there were times he could have had a few more interceptions than he did, you know, but hey, he's just knocking the ball away or watching the guy's eyes to see when he raises his arm. I'm like, turn around and catch the ball. That was just a pet peeve of mine. That's what I did. I didn't notice the fact that, oh, wow, that wide receiver's got four steps on him because he's slow. I never saw that. So I'll put you this way, real quick anecdote. I covered Nick Chubb his sophomore year. He came to a Nike camp, ran like a 4.8 40, and it was a cold day. It was just bad. He just tested bad. We're like, hey, look, we don't have to put that on your bio if you want. We can scratch. He's like, nah, put it on there. It's what I ran. But then, you know, you saw what Nick Chubb did in the NFL. You saw what he did in college. You know, it was just a bad day, and that's what I would chalk Kamari Lassiter's 40 times up to. I mean, you want a guy who can shut down a corner, you can play, you know, you put him out there on an island, he can do it.
I know we wanted to go rapid fire, but I got a quick follow-up in terms of Lassiter, because you referenced the hands, and that to me is what stands out about him in terms of his aggressiveness. But how much do you think that hand fighting that he's so known for could come back to bite him with respect to potential penalties on the NFL level? How concerning is that facet of his game?
He definitely had a few. And again, what was I saying? They play the man, you know? He doesn't play the ball. And the way they protect wide receivers and the way they're so quick to throw a flag on that, there's a good chance that he's a walking 15-yard penalty, you know, just because it's
that's not very encouraging, yeah.
Well, no. It's not. It's just, you can teach him to stop it, you know, he'll learn it, but it's just it's frustrating because, again, that I noticed that more than I did. Oh, he's not step for step with the wide receiver on a 9 round.
Yep.
All right, now let's rapid fire. last defensive player from me, Roddy, Tyke Smith. I think he's kind of the forgotten secondary player in this mix for Georgia. And, you know, you kind of talked about this when you talked about Bullard. Safety is a very broad defining position, but you have a lot of different roles within that position, right? So what role did Georgia use Tyke Smith in as a safety, and where do you think he really excelled, and what are the areas you think, well, maybe he could use a little bit of work?
They mainly used him at the star. They put him in at that nickel spot. They said, look, we need that fifth. I mean, that's their base defense, really. This was a guy who was an all-conference at West Virginia, transferred to Georgia, had to sit out a year because through injury. I'm like, wait a minute, you're all-conference. Why in the heck would you transfer? He's like, well, you know, I've been learning zone up here, and I need to come learn man. Or vice versa, I wasn't sure which one it was, but he went to another school to learn from different coaches to fill out his skill set. So he can play zone, he can play man, he's good at both. He can I definitely see him as that kind of nickel safety, nickel slot guy. Because he's just he's built for it. He's good at it, and he's tough against the run. He hits through people as well. So I don't see him as a, you know, cornerback one or safety one, but I definitely see him as being your fifth guy out there.
I want to jump back to the offensive side of the ball. You got a pair of running backs, Kendall Milton and Dejon Edwards. I think the common theme here is the fact that the workload is not overwhelming. Neither was used heavily as a receiver. I want to focus maybe more on Milton, and if you have a nugget on Edwards, I certainly welcome that. But with Milton, he really came alive late in the final five games. He averaged nearly 8 yards a carry, had 9 rushing touchdowns. There's all this talk about him being a short yardage guy. How much more do you see maybe out of him at the next level than just the guy that they'll line up in the red zone to take care of business?
He just doesn't have kind of that breakaway speed in the second half. You know, he's not he doesn't outrun people, but he's so – the initial contact when you hit him, just they kind of bounce off of him. So to me, it's that's a good selling point, you know, the fact that it takes multiple people to bring him down. And he has gotten better and better. He has fought injuries for 3 years, 4 years. I mean, it's just when he finally got healthy, we finally got to see the potential that he had. So I definitely see him. I don't know that he'll take it 80 yards to the house, but if you're inside, you're on the opponent's side of the field, he can take it to the – he can win it. So he's good. And with Dejon, he needs a crack. He's Jaquez Rogers to me. He's so tough to see coming out of the backfield, and he cuts so fast. All he needs is a sliver of a hole if he's through there. So neither one is going to be your premier first, second, third round guy, but they will definitely be productive backs in the NFL. But I just don't see either one being like a Hall of Famer, all pro, anything like that.
I want to go to wide receiver. I want to ask you about Marcus Rosemy Jackson. I was pretty impressed by him, Roddy, to be honest with you, at the Senior Bowl. There's no flash there, and I don't mean that in a bad way. He actually did have one really nice one-handed catch over the course of that week. But he just runs good routes. He has good hands. He gets open enough. He's a tough physical guy. But I don't know if we have the wow from an athleticism standpoint. I don't think we ever got a 40 time on him. What should NFL teams expect from Rosemy Jackson? To me, I see him kind of as a reliable possession guy in the NFL.
You took the words out of my mouth. He's a possession guy. He is he's production. He will produce. There's not that wow factor. I think back to Chris Conley, you know, came out of Georgia.
Kansas City Chiefs.
That's a good one.
Yeah, you just never really thought, well, Chris is good. Now, Chris did have some ridiculous numbers at the combine, to be fair.
He did, yeah.
There weren't these nuts highlights. You're like, look at these. Here's 15 one-headed catches, you know, and toe taps and stuff like that. But he just constantly caught the ball. turned around, made yardage, and moved the chain. So to me, if you want a guy that you can count on who doesn't have drops, you know, who is a great 50-50 guy because he knows how to box out, he knows how to use his hands, he knows how to draw penalties. I'm not saying he's a flopper, but once you've gone against it a few times, you realize that he knocks my hands away, so I need to go rougher with him. And all of a sudden, you see these guys basically just mugging him on an out route. And, of course, hey, guess what? The side judge saw that mugging too, and here's a flag. So if you're going to stop him, you're going to have to cheat. And when you do so, the flags come out. And if you don't kind of cheat against him, he makes you look bad. He catches the ball. Back shoulder catches are always there. So he's just going to keep lighting you up. Now, are they going to be 60-yard bombs? No. But is he moving the chains? Yes, every time. So if you got 53 spots and you want a receiver who's going to make you first downs and be in the right spot and know where to be on the field, Marcus Roseman Jackson can do it. And again, it's tough to have a lot of crazy flash and stuff when you're throwing to Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers every play.
A lot of competition, only so many opportunities on the field. Yeah. Last one for me, I want to stay on the offensive side of the ball and go back to the offensive line at center. Cedric Van Pran Granger, the experience is there. I mean, he's had 3 years of double-digit games, which you don't necessarily always see out of an interior lineman or even a guy out on the edge. How do you see that experience translating to the next level?
He will never make a bad protection call. You're not going to be able to trick him. You know, he understands the game better than anybody. This is a guy who I expect to be president at some point. Yeah. Of the United States. I don't mean of the NFL. I'm just saying
sure.
This is a guy who...
Well, he could start with the NFLPA first and then work his way.
Exactly.
To the Oval Office,
yes. He goes from there. And I'm hoping to get in on his cabinet, you know, in some sort of capacity. But Cedric's one of the brightest guys I've ever covered in all my years. He's, again, another guy without the flash, but could be like a 10-year NFL center. That's the best way I can describe it. You're not going to see him... You're not going to see him pulling, you know, in a center guard combo or something like that, but he will very, very, very seldom ever get beaten, and he'll always know exactly what's going on from the defense. So that's why, I mean, if you're going to win two national titles and be there for a third, going up against some of the best zero techniques in the SEC, you know, where they have all these different monsters and they're running twists and stunts and A-gap blitzes, and he's just protecting his quarterback like nobody's business. Again, no flash, no, not crazy size, not crazy speed, but just a guy who's there day after day after day who never makes a mistake.
All right, Roddy, a couple quickies. Anybody else that we missed that you particularly think is underrated that you really like that team should be talking about but they're not?
I'll keep an eye on Zion Logue, defensive tackle. Again, not very flashy, but just has the size to play at the NFL. Keep an eye on him. And I know it sounds silly, but keep an eye on William Moats. He's a long snapper.
Nice.
You gotta have him.
Now, you guys also had A.D. Mitchell there for a couple of years, Roddy, who's in this draft class. Yep. He transferred, and I love his tape, but I sit there and I'm like, why aren't his numbers better with everything that he could do? And there's an inconsistency factor there. I know there's some stuff maybe off the field that maybe people talk about doesn't take it seriously enough. And, you know, he basically said at the combine that he doesn't run his routes hard when he knows he's not getting the ball, which is what you don't want to hear. What was your experience with A.D. Mitchell when he was in Georgia?
I had nothing but good experiences with him. He came on early in a loaded wide receiver room, made some huge plays for the Bulldogs, made some great catches. And you're like, this kid has crazy potential. And then he left. I was mad at him because I wanted to cover him while he was here. So, I'm a little sour. I do love the kid. I hated that he wasn't in Athens, so I could cover him on those routes. I mean, on those years. But again, he has the reputation of, I don't think, kind of being a prima donna, but like you said, you know, well, I didn't go that hard. He's a little too honest is his problem. You know, he says the thing a lot of guys do, but he actually says it out loud. So he kind of gets a bad rap for it, but no, he's definitely a top-end wide receiver. He's got the speed, you know, the separation, the hands. He's going to make some team very, very happy.
And then, Roddy, last one, Carson Beck, do we think we'd be talking about him as a top 10 quarterback next year? And then who else from Georgia might we be talking about in the top 10 range in next year's draft?
Well, definitely Carson Beck. I mean, he's the one. That's the guy that's going to be I think right now he'd have been maybe the fourth or fifth quarterback taken. Coming back another year is only going to make him better. So Carson is a freak. Well, I'll put it this way. 2 years ago, I was, well, I guess, no, a year ago, well, I was at the Combine and wound up speaking to an NFL head coach who was went into the restaurant there. And he asked me, he's like, "What is Brock Bowers coming out of this draft?" I'm like, "No, coach, he's only a sophomore. He's got another year." He's like, "Okay." He's the only guy on the entire Georgia roster that he could name, you know, even though they had won a national title. But he knew Brock Bowers, and he was checking into him. That's kind of the way we're seeing the same thing about guys looking into Carson Beck. Like, is he coming out this year? Oh, okay. He's coming back, going to Georgia for another year? Draft. Well, we'll see him when he comes out. So the long knives are out for him. They're frothing at the mouth, waiting for their chance to – check out Carson Beck just to see what he can do, and I think he will be a top 10 pick.
And then anyone else from Georgia that we're going to be talking about in that range?
In that range, that is tough. They're going to have some definitely some good players. You know, I'm thinking of on the offensive line, you know, next year you could have Ernest Green. This is his second year here. I mean, he's a left tackle. He was able to actually start as a freshman.
Wow.
That's kind of nuts. I'd keep an eye on him at left tackle. Because he had set out a year with a back injury, but now that he's, you know, his first year back, he played all of Georgia's games at left tackle, so this is year three for him. And I could definitely see him with a massive year being a top guy, so keep an eye on him as well.
Roddy, great stuff, my friend. Tell the folks where they can find all your great work and insight on the Georgia football program.
Just go to UGASports.com. We'll have a draft tracker there, and we have insights on all these guys, and you won't learn about more Georgia players than you would at UGASports.com.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to doing this again with you next year again, Roddy. This was fantastic. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Roddy. Appreciate
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
Roddy the Bolsey does an awesome job. UGASports.com. Go check it out if you're interested in Georgia football. And needless to say, Lance, there's a reason they basically lose one game every year. they got a lot of good players and a lot of
just
different
attack,
spots
yes.
on offense and defense.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's overwhelming depth year in and year out. That's why I don't blame a kid for transferring if he can't get on the field, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
hard.
You were talking about Mitchell. Listen,
well, you're talking about Mims, right? He had to sit there and wait.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. So you can understand. I don't think it's a kid giving up. He's just saying to himself, listen, if I've got a pathway to the NFL, I could stay to be the fourth or the fifth guy on the depth chart, or I could try to jump to another program where I'm going to get more playing time. But, I mean, it's top heavy in terms of a lot of the guys that we focus on in the early stages of the conversation, and you look at Mims, I mean, the guy is just massive in terms of eating up space.
He's a good player, you know, too, man.
As
he
you mentioned,
played a lot.
Well, but I think you brought up a good point about the fundamentals may not be overwhelming, but he keeps guys in front of him. And you know what?
No,
that's your job.
He does not get beat
as an offensive lineman. So who cares if it's not pretty every single time? The bottom line is you feel good that he's going to protect your quarterback.
And he was at right tackle too. Do you think you can change him?
That was
going to
be my next question.
Experience, so it's a good question too.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I mean, he hasn't done left tackle at Georgia. So, but he's so big and he's such a good athlete. I would think that, you know, you might have some rough patches in the beginning, but I think it's something you could do.
I'd probably feel more comfortable starting with him at right and then working with him at left at practice, John, as an insurance policy. And then, listen, year two, year three, you want to move him, fine. But I'd work with his strength and the consistency, given the fact that also there's limited opportunities thus far in his collegiate resume, and I'd start him out on the right side.
I was fascinated and maybe a little surprised. Not that he thought Ladd McConkey could play outside, but he thought his better position was outside rather than the slot.
Well, I think one of the points that jumped out to me that he brought up, Roddy, was the fact that he just felt that there's more space for him to maneuver and continue to get open on the outside because, you know, he said, listen, you keep him in the slot, he's not going to face the top corner. So you may want to take advantage of that.
And you have a two-way go without the sideline there, too.
Yeah, so you can argue. But, you know, I mean, listen, there's pros and cons as we talk about in the slot. You may have more space left and right, but also there's a lot of stuff running in your vicinity and there's defenders on top of you. So, hey, you can bring him in and you can move him around. The more the merrier, yeah. I would look at that.
He doesn't have the production of the player.
No.
And he had some injury issues, but if you look at his physical stats and you look at his testing and you look at his stature, he's not dissimilar from Justin Jefferson.
Well, that's pretty high praise. I mean, to certainly throw him in the mix.
Jefferson, inside, outside.
Yeah,
right?
No, I get that.
They both ran around a 4.41. They're both around 6 feet tall. They check a lot of the same boxes. Again, Jefferson has been, you know, the most productive NFL wide receiver the last couple of years. I'm not telling you Ladd McConkey is Justin Jefferson. People say, oh, he can only play the slot. Well, if you match up his
measurables, they match to another guy that can do both pretty darn well. So
I think Jefferson does it with more flash, perhaps, is the way that I would differentiate the two of them. But the versatility is there, which I think was obviously your main point in terms of the comparison. Hey, in the NFL today, we know that injuries can happen in the snap of a finger. Hey, the Giants are the poster child of this. If you could draft a wide receiver coming in and you can say, hey, year one, he feels comfortable playing on the outside. He feels comfortable being thrown into the slot. He's interchangeable. If we lose our outside wide receiver, we can move him there. If we have limited options in the slot, plus, as we talked about, he's got special teams return experience. And I thought Roddy highlighted the fact that he doesn't mind getting down and dirty as a gunner, perhaps as a core special teamer. That's what you're looking for in the draft, John. You're looking for somebody that can fulfill many different roles. I mean, it's the old story, bang for the buck. If you get somebody on a rookie contract and you could tell me he could be a slot, he could be an outside, and he could be a special teamer and coverage, that's four roles that you're entertaining with one draft pick.
Yeah.
Sign me up for that.
Jefferson also about 15 pounds heavier, and that would be the other difference too, which is significant, especially if you're going to be an outside wide receiver. You want to get a little that can play off a press and stuff like that a little bit.
I mean, that's why I think your point was more of usage more so than anything else. And I think we can leave it at that.
All right, folks, go subscribe to the Giants Huddle podcast. Got a great lot of good episodes up there. Dane Brugler should be going up shortly. He, of course, is the author of The Beast. That should be up there in a little bit. It'll be Brian brought us tomorrow. Then we're going to have our mock draft on Friday, reporter mock. We have the first five picks in the bag with a surprise in there. And we're going to have Tom Rock do the Giants pick. We'll record that on Thursday. We'll air that on Friday. Also this week, you have our Bucky Brooks, Field Yates dual episode, which is a lot of fun, and the Charles Davis episode just posted yesterday as well. So go check it out. I know we do one a day. It's a lot. If you can't get to the content, go back. Remember to go back and find those episodes that you lost and or missed, and made sure that you get to them, because I try to do slightly different topics with all the guys, so it's not really that repetitive. But again, go check that out. And draft season as well, the latest episode just hit. Tony Pauline and I go on the top 10s on all the defensive positions in the draft. So go check that out on draft season. You can find draft season and the Giants Huddle on Giants.com/podcast, the Giants mobile app, or just search for either one on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, even for Big Blue Kickoff Live, leave that 5-star positive review. It really does help us. If you could just take the 2 seconds to click the 5 stars and leave a review. If you want to make fun of us in the review, that's fine. But if you do the 5 stars, that's all that really matters. That's cool. We would really appreciate it. It definitely helps us out. All right, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Let's go to the phones. Brian in Pittsburgh has been holding with us since the beginning of the show. Brian, we appreciate your patience. Sorry, I know there's a lot of Georgia prospects, but we'll give you some time here. What do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. First off, I appreciate you guys, and I appreciate the Giants for giving you guys the platform to do this.
Thank you.
Definitely some of the best information we could get. But for mentioning, like, the Giants Huddle podcast, your interview with Kurt Warner was very good. Very good, very informative. He made one specific point I wanted to touch on and maybe, like, expand on, get your guys' take on it.
Sure.
He had mentioned specifically with the Giants and in the NFL in general that a lot of teams are moving away from, like, read-based plays on offense in favor of, like, more of a pure progression, where no matter what the defense is doing, your first option is your first option, and then you progress from there.
Yep.
What do you guys think, like, some of the benefits of that are? Do you guys see that as well? Because I see a lot of the Daniel Jones criticism seems to be applying, like, a read-based analysis to a lot of his plays versus, like, a pure progression.
No, I totally get what you're saying, Brian. And look, it's hard for me to know, even, and I watch every single Giants game over on the All-22 after every game. So I do my best. But it's even hard for me to tell how they're teaching the quarterback on specific plays, how to read the defense, what their keys are. So I think I'm ill-equipped to be able to answer that question. A guy like Kirk can figure that out a little bit more. But I would say even with the pure progression pass game, right, where, and so just so fans understand what Brian's saying, some plays it'll be like, all right, well, if they're in man-to-man, you're going to look for this receiver. If you read cover two, you go here. If you read a single high zone, you go here. And that's how the play's designed, right? The pure progression is, all right, this guy's your number one receiver. If he's covered, you go to your number two receiver. If he's covered, you go to your number three receiver. And that's regardless of the defense that they're showing to you. What I would say, Brian, is that I still think it's important to be able to read that defense and coverage pre-snap and right at the snap, because it allows you probably to get off receivers you know are not going to be open against that defense more quickly, right? You know, even in a pure progression, if you read the team is in man and that first guy was supposed to be primarily someone that would be open if they were in a zone, you can get off that first read quicker because of your ability to read that coverage and understand what they're trying to do to you. So, yes, it's different. And I think teams probably use the pure progression a lot of ways to try to make it easier for the quarterback. So, you know, fooling them with coverages isn't as important because you have that pure progression style of read. But I still think it is important for a quarterback, Lance, to be able to read that coverage quickly so you can get through that progression as quickly as possible.
Well, the other reason is it gives you the ability to make a change at the line of scrimmage, perhaps even before the play starts, too.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I think it's beneficial to not necessarily get caught up on simply progression, but if you can get a read on how the defense is aligned because of your quick reaction, then maybe you can change the offensive play and move a player around. So I would lean more towards that. Though, speaking of progression, there's one play, if you recall, John, that stands out to me. This was Daniel Jones' rookie year. I want to say it was against the Vikings. He throws in the flat to Wayne Gallman for a touchdown. And on that play, he went through, I want to say, 4 to 5 different options left to right. I'm pretty sure it was the Vikings. Maybe I'm mistaken, but that game is standing out to me. So we saw a glimpse of that. Daniel Jones' rookie year. Now, of course, that was with Pat Shurmur and Mike Shula, different coaching staff, different philosophy.
Many coaching staffs.
Yes, exactly. Merry-go-round. But I think we got a glimpse of that in the early stages of his career, the emphasis on, hey, take your time, survey the field. But I think as quarterbacks get more and more advanced and polished, I think it's extremely beneficial to have them have that quicker reaction right out of the gates as opposed to get caught up on looking across the board with respect to all the personnel.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that too. Do you think that the protection plays any in, like, has any play into it? Like how long that a team believes that they could give their quarterback time to throw?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how those two would necessarily be related, because I do think regardless of which one of those two systems you're using, you're still going to want the quarterback to try to get the ball out pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I would say, though, maybe there's more urgency in the read and react
right
situation to have better protection than, you know, with respect to
And it's more important to be able to read that stuff pre-snap quickly if you know you have to get the ball out quickly, because you can't stay on that first read for very long.
Yeah, well, I mean, because once again, if you're going through a progression and you don't have a good offensive line, I don't see how those things synonymously can be successful.
Right.
Because how are you going to have time to look at the fourth or fifth option on a play like that? So I would say, to answer your question, Brian, I think there's more priority to make sure your house is in order if you're relying more on a progression-esque type of quarterback, because you just need more time. You need to be able to buy that to execute on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I can definitely understand that point. I'd also wonder, too, though, like sometimes like getting to your first option off of a read might take a little bit longer than just knowing, hey, I'm going to look at this guy first, like, so it's almost predetermined where you're looking versus, like, you know, reading a corner and then looking at your option.
Yeah, I think that's true, too. If your eyes are automatically going to go to that first guy no matter what, rather than having to take that second after you take the snap and say, all right, well, what are they in? Okay, they're in this. I'm going here first. I think that's probably a fair statement. I buy that.
You know, the other thing to take into consideration with respect to the progression, you also need to be cautious as a quarterback that you become too predictable. You know, defenses will pick up if they get an idea of who your first read is.
Well, that would also be the job of the coach.
To mix it up. Yes,
plays,
correct.
Right?
So that you're not looking for the same guy on the first read. But, you know, that's something you also need to weigh.
So
that to
honest,
me could be a con.
When you have a star wide receiver, usually that's the guy
they
you're
know
for first anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Vikings, you know you're going to go to Justin Jefferson and then
the
maybe
Bengals,
survey the field.
You probably go to Jamar Chase.
Jamar Chase.
And if you're the Cowboys,
sure,
you're probably going to CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, so, I mean, they already are going to prioritize that on defense. But, I mean, remember, there are a lot of teams that I think thrive on spreading the wealth.
I agree.
And
fair.
If you give that
like
to be
Niners,
more of an indication,
like
yeah,
Niners,
you know,
yeah,
then you at least give the defensive coordinator something more to think about.
Brian, you got anything else for us?
So, like, one more thing,
yeah.
I would say, like, draft-related.
Sure.
I tend to agree with Paul, what he said the last time he was on the show.
Well, that was your first mistake, but okay.
I know. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Dangerous proposition.
Going to the
right
dark
there.
Side.
Yeah, But I'd be more surprised than not if the Giants do end up taking a quarterback, just because I don't think if they take a quarterback, they'll be able to either get that guy or Drew Lock to stay on the practice squad. And the Giants haven't carried three quarterbacks than on, like, the 53.
Well, Brian, I hear you, but I think in that if you draft a quarterback, you're carrying three quarterbacks on your 53, and you would just have to adjust your roster accordingly.
Yeah,
I
mean, you're accepting that fact.
Yeah, I think if you make that pick, that's what's going to happen, period. Now, you might lose Tommy DeVito, depending if you can get him onto the practice squad or not, but if you have a quarterback in the draft that you think has the upside, I think that's a decision that I think you're okay with. Appreciate the call, Brian. Thank you.
Yeah, you're willing to, if you're going to take a quarterback, you're willing to then say, we're going to sacrifice an extra roster spot for a quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even a debate.
Cliff, I'll get to you in a second. I want to talk a little bit about the quarterback proposition, Lance, because what I've tried to do in the Giants Huddle podcast this year, I've tried to get different people on to talk about how they evaluate quarterbacks. I did Kurt Warner, and I'll give you a little summary of what each one of these guys said, right? And then this is how I'm kind of moving off of this a little bit. And then how I'm thinking about this quarterback class. It's going to be long. I apologize ahead of time. So Kurt Warner, we got on, former NFL quarterback, right? And every year he tries to watch these college guys coming to the pros. And what he said to me is that I'm trying to see how they do things you're going to be asked to do in the NFL. So going through reads, that sort of thing, processing. And he goes, look, it's really hard for me without knowing what the coaches are telling these guys, whether or not they're good processors. And how they're good at that, And frankly, he made the point with Jaden Daniels. He throws a bunch of slot fades a million times, and you're not going to be able to do that in the NFL. He's really good at it, but, and for him, even as a Hall of Fame NFL quarterback, he goes, without being able to be in a room with these guys and talk to them and find out what they're seeing on plays, what their process is, what they were told, what they're reading, it's hard for him to figure out how these guys are processing. And he said this to me off the air. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me sharing this. But he said, look, I had no idea C.J. Stroud was going to be that good right away. You watch him at Ohio State, he never did the stuff at Ohio State that you see him doing at an advanced level in the pros. So my theory now, guys, to be totally honest with you, I'm not going to try to figure that stuff out. Because if Kurt Warner tells me he can't figure out off of college tape whether a guy can process at an NFL level, what the hell chance do I have? So I'm not even going to bother trying, okay? Because I don't feel it's within my skill set to do that. So that's number one. Then I had Randy Mueller on, former GM of the Saints, and also a longtime Seattle executive. Yep. Also had Thomas Dimitroff on, former Atlanta Cardinals GM. So I asked them, all right, guys, well, how do you evaluate the quarterback position? And more specifically, to Kurt's point, how important are those meetings with these quarterbacks to figure out how they're processing? And Randy Mueller was especially good on that. He goes, yeah, look, until you sit down and you work the board and you work plays with these guys, you don't know how they learn, how they process, and that's doubly important. So that goes to the point where these teams have so much more information on these guys than we do, that I'm going to trust Brian Daboll and Joe Shane to evaluate these quarterbacks and decide, all right, we think this guy can be the here, this guy can't be. Then I get to Stephen Ruiz. He's a writer and podcaster for The Ringer, and his big thing every year is that he does his quarterback rankings, and he resets them every year in the NFL, so he studies quarterbacks a lot. And he said, look, John, I used to have a lot of trouble with college quarterbacks. Going through it, it was, I got things wrong. It was hard for me to figure it out, and it got to the point where I just said to myself, I'm just going to grade these guys based on traits, right? I'm going to see who is the best arm, who's mobile, things that I know I can see. This quarterback can do that. This quarterback can do that. Well, what's the most important things that we see that they can do that transfers to the NFL level? So that's kind of the approach I've taken here, right? Where I see what these guys can do on the field, what I know for sure. Like, I know for sure Drake May is better throwing over the middle than any other quarterback in this class. He's the best at it. Small windows, unbelievable. He's got a really good arm. I know Caleb Williams is really good at this. I know Michael Penix is really good at that. I know J.J. McCarthy is really good at this, right? And Jaden Daniels at that. Go through the list. So that's how I'm kind of looking at this, Lance. And I'm at the point now where I'm also going to aim, and we had this conversation with a lot of different people, I'm going to aim for the high-level traits, right? Yeah, would it be great to get a quarterback that is going to be a good NFL starter or an average NFL starter? Yeah, that's fine. Are you going to win a Super Bowl with that guy? It gets really hard. Like, Kirk Cousins is a good NFL quarterback. He hasn't sniffed winning a Super Bowl. And he's really good. He's a good player, right?
So I'm going to try to draft a guy, and this is why I landed on Drake May as my number two behind Caleb Williams, right? Because I feel watching him, he has the best combination of traits and things on tape. And now, again, NFL people, Chris Sims has talked about this too, where, oh, he doesn't always throw to the right guy. Well, I don't know who the right guy to throw to is on a play. I'm not a quarterback. I'm not an offensive coordinator. So I don't know if that's true or not. And they say, yeah, you know, his footwork and this. Well, I'm not a quarterback's coach. I'm not going to be able to judge some dude's footwork and know if mechanically he's exactly perfect. I don't know. They could all be 1,000% right about that, and then I'm going to be really wrong on Drake May. And that's okay. I'm doing the best I can knowing what I know, right? So I'm going to aim for the guy that I think has the best chance, Lance, to join that class of quarterbacks that gives their team a chance to win a Super Bowl every single year. The Lamar Jacksons, the Patrick Mahomes, the Joe Burrows, you know, that group of players that always has their team in the mix. The Josh Allens, I think Justin Herbert can get there. Not sure he's there yet. Trevor Lawrence type guys. Again, he's not there yet, but I think he can get there. I want to find the guy with that set of traits that I can see. It might still might not work out for the guy, but I think I'm giving myself the best chance of being right by looking at the quarterbacks through that type of lens.
Well, and then on top of that, even if they have the traits, if they don't go into a great environment, those traits may be slightly irrelevant too. Because if you put them in a situation where they don't have playmakers, they don't have a good offensive line, the defense doesn't provide balance. Yeah, so, you know, even after you do all your homework, it may not add up.
And whoever the Patriots draft this year, that's not going to be a great situation for the quarterback.
And that's what I always go by. I say, you know, you look at this quarterback, he stands out, and then you look at him, for example, you have a quarterback at Georgia. Well, he's surrounded by premier players at every position, and then you put him on the Patriots, a team that's struggling in every area. You don't think that's going to impact his play?
Of course it is. Of course it is. Of course it is.
But nobody necessarily takes that into consideration. That's the problem.
Well, like we like to say, quarterback win-loss is not a quarterback stat. Win-loss is a team stat, and that's going to be impacted the same way a quarterback's individual production will be impacted by what's going on around him.
Well, that's why, to me, Baker Mayfield is the perfect example for what we're talking about.
Because
he's been on a variety of teams, and notice his production has changed because when he went to Carolina, Carolina was very different than what Tampa Bay offered him. And Cleveland, when he found stability with Kevin Stefanski, was different than also what Carolina provided him. So
and
does that mean
the Rams and Bucks?
Actually, for the limited time he had with the Rams, Sean McVay actually was able to tap into something, especially that Thursday night game against the Raiders.
And like a guy like Darnold still hasn't found a good situation. Again, I'm not saying Sam Darnold's some great quarterback that's been bad just because of situations, but the Panther situation wasn't good. Well, I mean, look what happened with Bryce Young last year. I think we saw a bet now again, different coaches, but whatever. The Jets situation was bad. We didn't have receivers or an offensive line. So, and he didn't really have much of a chance with San Francisco last year. So if he gets to play this year, and we'll see what the Vikings can do, what they do with their quarterback situation in the draft, this is by far the best situation Sam Darnold's going to have a chance to play quarterback in as a pro. He still might not be good. I don't know. And I got it wrong with Darnold. I love Darnold because of his flashes on tape. And by the way, he still has some of those flashes in the pros, right? These crazy throws downfield. He's running. He's athletic. He's on the move. He's making tough throws. Then he misses the guy that's wide open 7 yards down the field. And he makes a boneheaded decision. He's seeing ghosts. He's throwing it at the defense. So this isn't a foolproof system that I've developed here, folks. I'm not saying that. I'm trying to be humble. But I'm just explaining to you how I'm looking at these guys because I think it's the only way I can do the evaluation without just watching and like, yeah, I think that guy's a good processor. I don't know. And I would love for other people to be a little bit more humble to say when they watch these guys to say there's a good chance I'm wrong and I don't know because I don't think we necessarily hear that enough.
Well, and it goes also back to the fact that that's why the meeting face-to-face is so valuable when these general managers and coaches take out the board and they go through sort of a simulated game and they say, okay, what are you seeing on the screen? Tell me, walk me through how you would then counter this defense. And then you see how the quarterback processes that. Because, I mean, even when we talk about plays in Giants games and, you know, individuals who watch want to say, well, the quarterback made the wrong read, the coach could be telling him to make the exact read that he made in the game.
Lance,
so how do you know that if you don't have that context?
100%. And there was a play last year, and I don't think I'm at liberty to disclose exactly what play. But I talked to somebody in the coaching staff that would know the answer to this question. And there was a big thing online Daniel Jones, why didn't he throw it to this particular guy down the field on a play on a third and long? And instead, he checked down to a guy that was a little bit shorter. And I go to the coach and I say, Coach, let me ask you something. Should he have thrown it to this guy? He goes, oh, no, that guy's not even in the read.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about.
And I'm like, okay,
yeah.
Then people are killing Daniel Jones for this play when the coach, again, I can't give you exactly what play it is, but the coach is basically telling me that, no, Daniel Jones did exactly what we told him to do on that play. And he's getting skewered online because he didn't take a shot down the field on a certain play. And again, it's things that, without being in those meetings and knowing, it's impossible to know sometimes whether or not these quarterbacks are doing the right thing. And it makes it difficult for us. It makes it hard. But just accept that it's hard and accept that you don't know. And I don't know. That's just kind of where I've landed on this thing, because evaluating quarterbacks lands might be the toughest thing. Team, and for all, the way we talked about this, how teams have all this extra information and they're able to glean more, they're still wrong half the freaking time. Yeah. Literally, top 10 quarterbacks wrong half the time. It's really, really hard.
Well, I would also say teams are also responsible for doing everything in their power to screw up the quarterback, too.
Also true.
So that's another reason why the process doesn't pan out accordingly. But the other thing I was going to add is it's also hard to play the quarterback position. In addition to evaluating it, it is, I mean, think about all the things that that one player has to go through for even to get the throw off, and then you're still relying on other offensive weapons to do their job on the back end of the play. So
the amount of decisions and things you have to see in a span of 2 seconds.
Instantaneous, yeah.
Besides hitting a baseball, it's, and it might even be harder than that, it's the hardest thing to do in all of sports.
Yeah, because, I mean, at least from the baseball, you're just reading what the pitcher is throwing and reacting. Whereas in the NFL, I mean, you're worried about 11 guys on defense who appear to be one way, then changing things up in the fraction of a second to the snap. Your offensive lineman can't block. Now you're running for your life. You wanted to throw it deep. You can't do that anymore. And now you're trying to salvage something. I don't think anything matches wits or comes into the territory of what it takes to process and play the quarterback position.
1,000%. We're in a complete agreement. Giant fans, take your fan to the next level with the season ticket membership. Stay connected to the club all year round, not just on game days. Memberships are now available for the 2024 season. To learn more about all the exclusive member benefits, go to Giants.com/tickets. Limited inventory is available. The Giants official connected TV streaming app, Giants TV, brings original video content, game highlights on demand, and direct to Big Blue fans. Also, all of our great content. Giants TV is free on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, and the Giants mobile app. And I never mentioned this. All of these shows go up on YouTube too, folks. So subscribe to the Giants YouTube channel. You can check out all of our shows there if you want to look at our handsome faces as we do the show rather than just listen on your favorite podcast platform. Just a reminder, Big Blue Kickoff 5 is presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the Giants. Cliff, I promised we'd get you in. I thought that was a good conversation about the quarterbacks. I'm glad we had it. I'm going to file that away for people that tweeted me to just go listen at that point of the show because I thought it was a good talk. But Cliff, you want to talk about the wide receivers. What do you got for us?
Just real quick, I'm rethinking the obvious call that everybody's making for the elite wide receiver if we stay at six. Looking at Matt Sitak's cover four yesterday about what he's looking for from Wandale and Hyatt next year, and thinking that we do have with Slayton two guys already that can take the top off the defense, I'm thinking I might be able to wait another year for the Stephon Diggs move that they made in Buffalo, which and trade down again. I'm still and hearing about Bowers today. I think drafting him that high would be like drafting Isaiah Simmons that high as a safety when he wasn't really a safety. Bowers is a hybrid to me. And so it would be exceptional to have a tight end that can do what he does, especially if Bellinger can be on the field with him at the same time, and especially if he can grow as a blocker.
Yeah, I don't know how far you're going to be able to go down, Cliff, if you still want to get Bowers, though. Like, I would say if you go anywhere outside past the Jets at 10, I think you get into a dangerous spot where he might not be there.
Is there enough capital to trade from the 11, 12, and 13 teams that are supposed to be interested in trading up? Do they have enough to give us? Because there's going to be one of those teams left if the projections hold for what the first three teams do. One of those teams is still going to be left to beseech us for our pick, right?
Not if four quarterbacks are already gone. That's
yeah,
problem,
I mean, it depends on how many go. So you're talking about Chicago, Washington, New England take quarterbacks, and what you're saying, somebody switches spots with Arizona and the Chargers? Because that's 4-5. Is that
right.
the scenario?
And so you're saying there's not enough elite for the third team in that group with Denver.
Well, I mean, it depends on how they view whoever's left, you know, and we don't know that. I mean, think about it. When three quarterbacks go off the board, and I've had this conversation on many different programs, you then have to be a believer that the one guy left over is very high on the boards of multiple teams. That's how you have to think. And do I think that's true for the majority of NFL teams? No. I think then that would be teams settling and reaching because they're desperate for a quarterback. Now, could there be one team who loves a J.J. McCarthy, let's say, or another quarterback that you think is outside of the top three? Let's go from a hypothetical conversation. Sure. I don't think the volume, though, is as high as maybe the one or two teams, and that means you don't have as many teams that are willing to switch spots with you.
Yeah, and Cliff, I'll say this too. I'm tired of this offense not scoring points.
I know.
I'm tired of it. And if you don't add a big-time weapon to the team this year, you're not going to score a lot of points again. You lost
your
top...
But you added stability. You added big-time stability to the offensive line. Huge stability.
Great, but Cliff, but you lost your best offensive weapon to Saquon Barkley, and you still don't know if your second-best offensive weapon of Darren Waller is going to be here next year.
Don't need him. I'm also thinking about what Kafka was doing at Kansas City.
Wait, time out. Cliff. Time out 1 second.
You don't need Waller.
So you take away your two best offensive weapons. You don't add anybody else on the offensive weapon side of the ball, and you think we're going to be fine.
Yes, we do. No, we got Wandale and Hyatt.
I said add. You don't add.
They're not new.
They were already here, Cliff.
The guy that they used to have in Buffalo, they brought in was a slot receiver. Maybe they brought him in mainly as a returner. What's his name?
Well, Isaiah McKenzie, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really.
A slot weapon.
He is a slot, but
okay,
I mean,
okay. So then you're taking Wandale Robinson off the field.
He's not Barkley or Waller,
in terms of
production.
It's just you want to add weapons. I mean, who's to say Wandale can't play on the outside? I saw him make a deep ball catch on the sideline.
I understand, but my point is that McKenzie's not better than Slayton, Hyatt, or Robinson. So how is he getting on the field?
It would be a scheme change.
No, well, you would have to have like five wide. No, Cliff, you need.
We don't even know if McKenzie's going to make the team, by the way.
You can't go into next year after what happened the last few years, get worse from the weapon perspective.
And
think your team's going to be better offensively. With all due respect,
We can do the addition you want with the next group of wide receivers in the draft after the top three, right?
Well, you can, but you have a lot more misses in the second round in wide receiver than you have in the top 10 the last few years.
Yeah, and if you pass up on Neighbors and Adunze, you know, there is a drop-off once you get to the next batch of wide receivers. I think this team... You know, what I think you're surpassing, Cliff, is you need a proven commodity, okay? When you remove Barkley and Waller, perhaps, due to retirement, and nothing's official yet, so we'll see how that pans out, you can tell me about Isaiah McKenzie and Wandale Robinson and Jalin Hyatt. Those guys are not proven commodities to the degree of Waller and Barkley. Waller and Barkley have done it for multiple seasons. Yes, they've battled injuries, but you have a really good idea of what you're going to get and how you're going to use those guys. Wandale has flashed in between injuries. Jalin Hyatt has a very small sample size as a rookie, and McKenzie has been a special teamer at a lot of places he's gone. Not a prolific offensive weapon with a high volume of offensive snaps. So, I mean, I don't think the last caller, John, is looking at it through that lens as a means of comparison to what Waller and Barkley provide. So to pass up on somebody that's coming out of college who has multiple years of heavy production, has been utilized as a main weapon, you know, that's what we're talking about. And if you say, well, you could wait another year... The Giants have averaged in the teens on offense. What makes you think that they're going to be able to snap their fingers and give some of these younger guys more snaps and more playing time, and that's magically going to increase your point total? I disagree with that viewpoint completely.
All right, I'm going to throw this out there to you, and then we'll wrap. I know I got to eat too, Dom, and I got something to do too.
I got to eat too, by the way, if I'm going to throw me. Okay, I thought I was being left out here, but that's okay.
Correct.
Yes.
So top 11 wide receiver. I'm skipping last year's draft class because it's just 1 year. We don't have a lot of data on it yet, right? But you go back to the 2023 draft class, right? Or the 2022 draft class, pardon me. The top wide receivers in that class were Drake London at 8, Garrett Wilson at 10, Olave at 11. All right, I'm going to throw Jamison Williams at 12 out because he's had a lot of injuries. But those top three wide receivers, they're all hits, right?
Yeah.
You think they've all been really good players and they've worked out? And even Jahan Dotson at 16, I think, has had a pretty good run at it, okay? But I'm more talking about the top 11, top 10 guys. I'd put those three guys in the same category we have the three guys in this year, right, in terms of the quality of players that they are. Here are the second wide receivers that year. Christian Watson, Wandale Robinson, John Mechie, Tyquan Thornton, George Pickens, Alec Pierce, Sky Moore.
Not nearly big, the same level, yeah.
Big difference. Let's go out of the
Now, Mechie, remember, dealt with cancer, so correct. The jury is still out.
Let's
but
go to the 2021 draft class. Three receivers picked in the top 10. Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith. Pretty good.
Yeah.
No? I think
separation.
Those are all hits. Here are your second-round wide receivers. Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Dwayne Eskridge, Tutu Atwell, Terrace Marshall Jr.
Not nearly the same level of difference makers.
Not yeah. even in the same ballpark in terms of the quality of player. So yes, do I think you can find, this is a really good wide receiver class, I think you can find a really good wide receiver late? I absolutely do. It's a lot harder, and the hit rate is much, 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 much lower.
Yeah, and you're not looking for a complementary weapon. See, that's why, John, I go back to, Cliff was talking about a bunch of complementary weapons. It's almost the old story, more is better. I'm just going to throw more talent on the field. No, sometimes less is better if part of the lesser group is a star-studded player. And that's what this team needs. You need somebody to put fear in the eyes of opposing defensive coordinators. Right now, there's not that proven commodity on the roster, no matter how you want to spin it.
I forget who I described it to this way, but I feel like you're building like a room, right? And you got a bunch of great accent pieces. A vase is nice. You have like an accent wall. You have a little painting that's good. But you're missing the thing in the middle of the room that brings everything
the
together.
The wow factor.
Yes.
Yeah.
You need, like, what is this? Is there a couch in the middle of the room? Is it a cool table? Like, the thing that makes the room functional. That's what you still need. The Giants have some accent pieces, but they don't have the thing that
they
makes
don't have
the
centerpiece.
Room go.
Yeah. They don't have that item, to use your analogy, when you walk into the living room and you have something to immediately ask the owner about.
Or the thing in the room that tells you what the room's used for.
Sure,
is
that
this
too.
Is this an office? Is it a living room? Is it a bedroom? What's the thing that defines the room? They don't have that there yet. Now, could one of these guys theoretically develop into that? Sure, maybe. But are you willing to bet a season on that?
That's a big roll of the dice. And listen, I'm one of the few people that has been high on Wandale Robinson forever. But, you know, unfortunately, because of his injuries, it hasn't always come together. And I don't know if you could bank on him now being the guy that completely takes off this season. You got to protect yourself.
Now, if you can go down to 9 and you still feel pretty good, you're going to get, you know, one of the three wide receivers or Bowers there. Okay, cool. I'm fine with that. 11, I think you're pushing it. Would it shock you if the Jets pick one of those playmakers to go with Aaron Rodgers?
Not at all.
Wouldn't shock me at all. If I was them, would I pick an offensive tackle? Yes. Would it shock me if they picked a weapon? Nope. I think the Bears are picking a weapon. What happens if the Falcons decide, oh, well, we don't think any of these edge guys are worthy of a top 10 pick. We're going to get out. And then somebody moves to 8 and picks another weapon.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how that's going to go. So I think moving down can get very, very risky.
And you know what? Just real quickly here, yeah. John, I don't know if the Giants could even think about being in that luxurious position to move down given their offensive struggles.
Given the need, right?
Can't you say to yourself, we've got a huge need, take the player you love and don't ask any questions. Meaning, John, is it worth gambling and sacrificing that player to gain an extra pick or two who may even come into play in 2025 or 2026?
Yeah, might
is
not,
that worth it?
Yeah, might not even be picked this year. You're right.
Why give up on that?
This is, yeah. I know we did supersized here, but I thought that was really good. I thought we had
absolutely
a conversation at
sure
the end. Great job by Roddy Nabolsi talking Georgia prospect. Thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. You can find us on Twitter at LanceMEDOW and at Schmelk.
make sure you check us out, and we'll see you tomorrow. By the way, Joe Shane's press conference tomorrow, I should mention, is at noon tomorrow. So if it goes a little bit long, BBK will start a little bit later. But you and Paul, I believe, correct?
Yep.
We'll have coverage. You'll have a reaction to the Joe Shane press conference at a couple more schools as well as we wrap up our week of draft prospects. And then on Friday, I believe it's me and Paul on Friday, correct? Or are you with me on Friday?
No, I'm not here.
Okay, so
maybe
me
you
and Paul
on Friday.
Yeah. I think we're going to have Kyle Krabs, one of our resident draft experts, pop on the show and talk some draft with us. For Lance Bendel, I'm John Schmuck. We'll see you next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thanks, everybody.